The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network. I want to mention a great resource for writers, and this month's sponsor, Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories. I'll expound later in the show, but the short version is this long-awaited book about the craft of creative writing from New York Times bestselling author Steve Almond sets out to debunk the well-meaning but misguided myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and most honest work. Pick up a copy today of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, wherever you buy books, more soon. Greetings, scribes. I have got some exciting news to share. The Writer Files now has an exclusive Patreon community where subscribers will get exclusive access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and content from productivity and publishing experts each month. In the meantime, just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles. It's free to join Patreon to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something special.
But my work-life balance was unhealthy, which I realized after my mom passed away, really sort of tragically. And I had to keep working through it, which was just almost impossible. And I reached a point where I had just had enough. I had gotten all these accolades. I was paid very little. I was denied promotion after promotion. And I very publicly sort of quit. And when I quit, there was a little bit of a movement in publishing. A lot of, the journalists call it the Great Publishing Resignation.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am still your humble host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. Critically acclaimed debut novelist Molly McGee spoke with me about the best day of her life, her part in the Great Publishing Resignation, losing a parent, and her first book, Jonathan Abernathy, You Are Kind. Molly writes fiction and essays and taught in the undergrad creative writing department at Columbia University, where she also graduated with an MFA in fiction. Her debut novel is Jonathan Abernathy, You Are Kind, described by the New York Times as a story about debt-laden citizens who are recruited to audit others' dreams, all in the name of productivity. In a starred review, Booklist said of the book, "A superlative state-of-the-nation novel like no other, full of astoundingly resonant and eminently quotable points about labor, capital, and depression, this wondrous literary creation brilliantly captures the excessive demands of contemporary work." Molly has worked in the editorial departments at McSweeney's, The Believer, Farrar, Straus, and Giroux, and helped launch a horror imprint at Tor. Her work has appeared in the Paris Review, Lit Hub, and others. In this file, Molly and I discussed her past life as a New York Times bestselling editor, using writing as a coping mechanism for grief. The nightmare that became a book. Why she thinks of herself as a reader first. Learning how to give yourself grace. The importance of authenticity and vulnerability in your writing, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. Okay, we are back on The Writer Files. I am honored today to be joined by an esteemed guest. We've got acclaimed debut novelist Molly McGee is hanging out. What is happening over there?
Hey, I just got done with my book launch last night. It was kind of crazy.
are you reeling from the festivities?
Like I am. I was like, oh my God, is this the best day of my life? And it was.
That's awesome. Yeah. So this is the start of a whirlwind world tour. What's the vibe other than the best? You just had the best night of your life, I take it?
Yeah, it did feel that way. So I hope that I can do that again sometime.
Yeah, how do you top that?
How do you top that? I don't know. But yeah, I'm going on tour. I'm really excited to chat with people across hashtag America. So,
well, congrats on the reception of your debut novel. It's got to feel pretty good. I can't wait to talk about Jonathan Abernathy, You Are Kind. Of course, get into that. But I'd love to talk a little bit about your superhero origins and kind of this really interesting life that you have led up to this point, the apex that we find you at. But yeah, let's talk about...
Captain, we just met, but sure. Sure, we can call my life superhero origins.
I can't wait to talk about your time at Columbia, and of course, the time that you've spent working in editorial departments. Take us back a little bit and talk about kind of this interesting path.
So I grew up in Tennessee. I'm Southern, and I somehow ended up sort of going to college in Vermont. And while I was there, I was introduced sort of to the idea of publishing, and I started working at a place called McSweeney's. I had to be really annoying to get the job. I was like, hey, please let me sweep your bathrooms. I'll do anything, you know? But in the end, I ended up out there and I was very lucky. Nobody on the team liked the internet, and I happened to like the internet a lot. So I sort of found a niche for myself. From there, I went to, it's kind of hard to like put your life into comic book format, but I ended up taking a year off after graduating, writing a book. And my boss at the time at McSweeney's was like, you're wasting your life. And I was like, damn, okay, Andy, that's a little intense, but sure. And she was like, you are like a very talented writer and you need to take it seriously. And I was like, oh, that's really nice of you to say. And she talked me into going to Columbia, where I got to study with folks like Alex Kleeman and Ben Marcus. While I was there, I worked at another publishing place called FSG, and I taught in the undergraduate department. From there, this is kind of crazy. I'm like, what did I do all this? But from there, I ended up at I graduated right before COVID happened. And I was really lucky. I got a publishing assistant job at Tor. And that's where I was working during the pandemic. I got to release some really cool books. I became a New York Times bestselling editor. But my work-life balance was unhealthy, which I realized after my mom passed away, really sort of tragically. And I had to keep working through it, which was just almost impossible. And I reached a point where I had just had enough. I had gotten all these accolades. I was paid very little. I was denied promotion after promotion. And I very publicly sort of quit. And when I quit, there was a little bit of a movement in publishing. A lot of, I think the journalists call it the Great Publishing Resignation. But it was a lot of young women who were basically like, hey, these jobs are unlivable. How much we get paid and how intense our work week is. It's like we're working 70 hours and, you know, we're forced to live in New York. And we just can't afford it with the pay grade that we're at. Now, during all this, I had been kind of struggling. And one of the ways that I cope is through writing. I've always loved to write. And I was working on a book that sort of was an amalgamation of all these really intense feelings that I had been having around working and living. One of the reasons I started writing the book is because I was having these really intense nightmares. And in my nightmares, there was this lanky guy who was in a lot of debt and would end up going into sort of the dreams of other people and cleaning them up. And I was having this nightmare over and over again until I started writing it down. And once I started writing it down, I sort of became free of the night terrors. And it became this book. And now here we are talking, which is frankly insane. So not to give you the sort of long and the short of it, but it's been a very strange path.
Yeah, it's super, super interesting. Yeah, it kind of, it's a little unbelievable, but it, I mean, it makes sense that, of course, you were, you know, grieving a serious loss. And of course, sincerest condolences about the loss of your parent, because losing a parent is one of the hardest things, I think, to go through. But it's also kind of a moment of reflection, right?
It's just awful. I don't know what it is, but I know I'm going to have to go through it again eventually. And I just hope that I don't have to. Yeah, I guess a moment of reflection. I don't know. My grief was uncontainable. And it really just completely changed my perspective on everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and it'll do that for sure. I'm always saying that as someone who's lost a father many years ago.
No, I'm so sorry.
And no, but it is also kind of a moment of relief too sometimes, because you know, he was just someone who had gone had experienced quite a bit of pain and had suffered. With an
illness.
My
mom suffered. Yeah, it's really hard to watch someone you love suffer.
Earlier in the show, I mentioned an invaluable resource for writers. Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories based on 3 decades of writing, failing, and trying again. Author Steve Almond is a beloved professor at Harvard and Wesleyan and the acclaimed New York Times bestseller of 12 books of fiction and nonfiction. And in Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, Steve employs the radical empathy he displayed as a co-host of the Dear Sugars podcast with Cheryl Strayed, where they explored the joys and trials of storytelling to explode myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and truest work. The book includes chapters on plot, character, and chronology, but travels far beyond the earnest intentions of most craft books. It also includes writing prompts to generate new work. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Russo called it one of the best books on writing he's ever read, and also the funniest. Pick up a copy of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories, wherever you buy books, and add it to your TBR today. And just a quick aside to revisit the exclusive Writer Files Patreon community, where subscribers get access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and a lot more. I know that for serious writers, it can be more distracting than ever to cut through the noise, stay productive, and home in on what's happening in the publishing industry. Over 8 years, we've provided a looking glass into the habits of professional writers and publishing industry insiders. And as your humble host, I've decided to launch a membership-based Patreon for serious scribes to cut through the noise, swap tips and tricks, and hang out with like-minded peers. Just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles for bonus writing resources, monthly episode breakdowns, writer's happy hour, a community of your peers, ad-free episodes, and more. It's free to join to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something cool and special. Keep calm and write on.
I know it was years ago, but this is the thing, is it always feels kind of present, doesn't it? It never really goes away all the way. You just kind of get better at privatizing it, I think.
Yeah.
Holding it with you as you move through life.
For sure. And losing a loved one is something that kind of just sears a hole in you. But, you know, some great writers and artists and authors have, you know, spoken about how it can lend to a depth or a richness in the artistic work that you know, maybe once wasn't accessible, which is unfortunate.
For me, it's hard to think about the sort of good parts about it. So I might not be, I might not give the best answers in terms of creative process. Cause hey, I'm going to be totally honest. I'm still bitter as hell. I'm kind of mad. I'm like, I wish my mom was alive. Sure. You know, I would trade my fucking book for that any day of the week. But, you know, I think that's something that I'm trying to get to a point where I can feel grateful. And that's like a journey I'm on right now. I'm getting worked up.
I'm so sorry.
I'm like kind of sad.
We're here to talk about this fantastic book. And of course, thank you for sharing and being honest about your journey and your path. Because, of course, Jonathan Abernathy, You Are Kind has had a great outpouring. Your peers have come out of the woodworks to praise it. Some really amazing things have been said about this fantastic book. And I want to hear you talk a little bit more about it, of course, and not to gloss over the heavy stuff, because that's equally important. But yeah, I'll just read a couple of blurbs. And I thought it was cool that in a Booklist Star review that had said or had called it a superlative state of the nation novel like no other, full of astoundingly resonant and eminently quotable points about labor, capital, and depression. This wondrous literary creation brilliantly captures the excessive demands of contemporary work. And of course, you know, I mean, some of the bigger themes that we're talking about here, this, the relentless crushing weight of debt, which, you know, so many of us have experienced in our lives or are currently
so
experiencing, you know,
this
is not something that goes away.
Not me, you know? Yes, for real. It just, there's so many elements that just make it hard to exist. You know, we're all out here trying our best. And the thing is, it's to me, it's amazing that we are all able to choose to keep going the next day, just because life is really hard. And it's so much of our sort of existence as Americans is trial by fire, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to write about that. I was seeing my friends, you know, like over and over again, do their best, right? And just like everything being put sort of against them, every obstacle. And I really wanted to sort of examine that system and what it might do to a person.
For sure. And again, congrats. Debut novel for the modern working stiff. Of course, you know, I mean, you have followed in the footsteps of some, obviously, some great writers who have gone down this path, but from your perspective, to write about this, really, really kind of, you know, I mean, it's been called so many interesting things, like a sci-fi novel that scrapes the workforce of human suffering. I thought it was great. The New York Times had said that. Of course, you know, there's an element of the absurd. There's an element of horror here. Did your time at Tor have any, did it awaken something in you? But of course, you know, you're a student of the craft, and you've studied some great greats.
I think of myself as a reader first, and I just love to read, and I love to read everything. I'm not necessarily, I'll say it, I'm not always like, I'm not really a snob about it. You know what I mean? If a book is good, a book is good. Now, that could be for me, like War and Peace, but hey, it could also be Carrie by Stephen King. That shit slaps. So, you know, you get a different thing out of each of those texts when you read them. And neither of the things that you get is better necessarily than the other. They're just sort of different flavors of experience. And when I was writing, you know, I always had a little bit of a hard time with this sort of like intense marketing categories that we're working under today. Like if Frankenstein came out today, they would market that shit as like just a hard sci-fi novel. But it's, you know, it's sci-fi wasn't really as a genre invented until like the 1960s. So I just really wanted to write a book that I would enjoy reading. And I tried not to discriminate when it came to techniques. Something that I really love about books are when they feel propulsive and immersive. So I love that feeling where twists happen, right? And your entire perspective is changed. But I also love books that where they take the language really seriously and they grapple with really heavy topics. So really all I was doing was I was just writing a book that I really needed to read at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I just love reading so much. And I just, when I was writing it, I was like, I gotta finish this because I need to read it. You know, I need to sit quietly for several hours and think alongside someone through a story where I can sort of process some of these bigger things that I'm dealing with. And I need a little bit of, hey, you know, like the feelings are really intense for me. And I needed a little bit of pain relief in terms of humor and story and characters. And I wanted people to fall in love. You know, that's like how life works. That's how all the good books work. So I was a little, hey, I'll be honest. I was like, if I like a technique, I'm gonna use it. I don't care if it's, you know, I saw it for the first time in a mass market paperback that I got for 25 cents, you know, or if it's like one of the novels of the year where the entire 500 pages is one sentence, you know, like it's like I like both. So I really just wanted to write a book that I would like. And I think I've done that. I think I've done that. Now, whether you're going to like it or not, I don't know. I hope you do, but that's not up to me.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I mean, you said it, like good artists borrow, great artists steal. And I'm not saying that you've stolen anything by any means. This seems like a completely original entry. And yeah, I mean, I thought it was really interesting. It did remind me of the streaming series Severance, which I love very much.
I haven't seen that one.
It's very interesting, but only it said, and Litheb had mentioned this, that it is the spiritual sibling of Severance, and but creepier, which is kind of a great compliment because Severance is pretty creepy. But yeah, check it out. I think you'll enjoy it.
When I was at Tor, I helped launch their horror imprint, and it was one of the first horror imprints to sort of be launched by a big five since the heyday in the 80s. So, hey, I like it. I like horror, but I don't like it when it's gory. Like, I don't like it when it's too scary.
This is like psychological horror, really.
Yeah, it's really like what I like is that feeling like, hey, I kind of want to stay up and turn the next page. You know, it's like, well, what's going to happen next?
And, exactly.
You know, I don't know about you, but one of my favorite parts of horror movies is talking to the TV. So I'll be like, why are you going into the basement? Don't go into the basement. Oh my God, you're such a dumbass. You're going into the basement. And I really felt like that when I was writing Jonathan. I was like, boy, why are you doing this? But of course, this is what you would do in this situation.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, I think everything we, all the art we read or consume, I really don't watch a lot of TV. So it's like all of that, I think, just informs the art that we make. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we can separate it as much as people sort of think we can.
Interesting. Well, I wanted to quote you in a piece that you had written for Lit Hub. I wanted to go deeper on it because it was the very last paragraph of this when you're writing about David Foster Wallace.
I like him, but it's problematic, you know.
Men who don't know women on unlearning the lessons of Dick Lit, which is a great piece. Great piece. I will link to it. But you said in this final paragraph, which really stood out to me, understanding the difference between irony, empathy, cruelty, and sincerity is often dependent on understanding the context, and context can only be gained in the passage of time. Like a chimera, our understanding of life and our relation to one another is constantly changing. In every decision we make, we further become ourselves, and often the self we become is not the self we expected to be. Which I thought really was kind of emblematic in a sense of Jonathan, but yeah, talk a little bit about a little bit of the meaning behind it, and maybe what there wasn't one.
Yeah, Kevin, hey, I'm going to get a little deep again. I personally, you know, I have an intense personality. Can you tell? And there was a period of my life when I really fought against it. And, you know, I really didn't like it. I was like, God, like walking into a room wearing the loudest clothing there. And I had just spent 2 hours trying my best to look normal. You know, it was like a struggle. And then I got into the room and then I was like, fuck, everyone's wearing neutrals again. Like, why? How have I not learned this lesson? Like, why am I the only person wearing red here? And I often sort of feel that way in life. But after my mom died, I sort of like lost my very meager ability to quote unquote fit in. I was just putting so much effort into being, just trying to stay alive, you know, that I couldn't fight against my own personality anymore. That I couldn't be self-conscious in the way that I had been self-conscious before my mom passed away. It's just like, yeah, sometimes I say inappropriate things and sometimes I laugh at the wrong moments, or I don't always understand the context of the conversation, you know, and I jump in at a time when I really should have kept my mouth shut because I was trying to help. Hey, it leads you down the wrong path sometimes. Once I sort of started accepting who I was instead of fighting against who I was, things became a lot easier for me. But it almost was a grieving process. I don't know if you've gone through something like this, but you know, you're growing up, and when you're growing up, you wonder like, oh, who am I going to become? You know, what am I going to be like? And there are a lot of moments in your life where you behave in a way where you're disappointed with yourself afterwards. Now, for me, the big lesson was sort of like learning how to give myself grace. I was really hard on myself. And realizing that I had less control over my own life than I thought I did was a very freeing notion, because I realized like all I have to do, what my job is to just come into every interaction and try my best in the moment. Try to be sincere, try to be present, try to be with another person. And if that is taken wrong or rubs people the wrong way, hey, that's outside of my control, because I can only try my best. And some days my best is pretty bad. It's pretty mid and I'm sad about it, but that's okay. That's part of living. I sort of think, you know, we can get caught up in black and white thinking and all of the pieces, you know, it's that piece was me struggling with the fact that, you know, I'm sitting in my office right now. I'm looking at my bookshelf where I have everything Mr. Foster Wallace has ever written. And, you know, it's like, hey, I like women, and like, I'm not a misogynist as far as I know, but like, what I wanted to examine what about it was so interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And sort of explore that shame, because I think in his fiction, he was often ashamed of who he was too. And he was really sort of grappling with that. The idea of finding who you are and trying to exist in resonance with who you are in your core really resonates with me. But I do think for me, one of the biggest challenges was letting go of the notion that I necessarily got to control every, you know, it's like, hey, I like mint chocolate chip ice cream. That's embarrassing, you know, but I like it. It does something for me. Yeah. It's no use denying it. And I feel like that's kind of a metaphor for sort of the challenges of being a person.
Sure. And also being now an acclaimed debut novelist, and so you have your feet in both worlds.
I guess I'm going to be totally honest. I'm struggling a little bit. Sometimes I forget that all this stuff is public and like people are watching me, and I say something that I'm like, that was a little too vulnerable. I shouldn't have said that. But it's all a learning process. And right now I'm learning while everybody is watching. No pressure.
No, it's really cool to hear you talk about the process. And of course, yeah, just kind of, as you said, finding who you are, but also finding resonance and being accepting of you know, all the differences that we all
have. And letting go of some of your expectations, you know?
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I could probably listen to you talk all afternoon. But I know that you have this world tour going on, so of course.
Oh my god,
it's exciting! An exciting time to catch you, and of course, you're invited back. What are you working on now?
I am working on a new project. I'm handwriting it, and I'm not telling anybody anything about it.
That's very cool. Okay, so you're a handwriter on the first draft.
Each novel seems a little different. When I wrote Jonathan, I didn't handwrite it. But for this one, I think I wanted to be authentic. I didn't want this whole thing to go to my head. You know, it's kind of like I did my book launch last night and there was 150 people there and it sold out. That's crazy. I can't even conceive of that. I'm still like in shock, you know, and
that's so cool.
It's really cool. And so I'm working on this novel while all this other stuff is happening, right? And I just really, really don't want to lose that vulnerability or that authenticity. So for this one, it seems like I need to sit down by myself in a little tiny, very poorly decorated room and write my shitty handwriting onto a page and keep moving forward without, I really want to try to stay away from that sort of crippling self-consciousness. And for right now, handwriting seems to be the answer to that for me.
Amazing. Well, we thank you for your time, your words, your wisdom. We know you got to get your next thing. But yeah, come back and wrap with us again in the future. Congrats on Jonathan Abernathy, You're Kind. I'm going to connect to your home base, of course, there. I'll drop a link to mollymcgee.com. And we appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I had a great time chatting with you. I hope we get to hang in person soon.
100%. Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.